Okay, so we have our three doshas of Ayurveda. We call Vata, Pitta, and Kapha. So now each of the doshas are a combination of two elements, right? So we see that, I'll just go through them one at a time here. So we'll start with Vata. So Vata is composed of the air and ether elements. So I like to think of Vata as the wind that moves through space. Right, thinking of air and ether, the wind that moves through space. So the primary attributes of the Vata quality, the Vata dosha, is that it is cold and dry and movable, like movement oriented, right? So if you think of the way wind is, right, think of how you feel on a really windy day, right? It's like the wind cools you down and it dries you out and it's constantly like movement, right? And there's not a lot of stability, like there's nothing solid to air and ether, right? There's nothing solid about that. It's all kind of this etheric quality. And so you'll oftentimes see that with people that embody a strong constitutional quality of Vata there. And I'll get into more, I'm just introducing the doshas very briefly here. In a minute, I'm gonna get into more detail on each of the doshas in more detail. So cold and dry, movable, like movement and change, is a big part of Vata, and we can see this in the sense that I do a whole section on seasonal aspects of the doshas, but you see that Vata is the energy in between the seasons. So I like to think of it as like the winds of change, that when we're shifting, like the Vata is actually steadily increasing from now and peaks right at the solstice, right? Because we're making that transition from spring into summer. So Vata is increasing up until the solstice, and then it starts to decrease because it's that wind that's blowing that one season out and the new season in. And we see this in astrology in that all of the mutable signs are at the end of each season. And mutable and Vata are one and the same thing, right? So that's in astrology, we have our three modes. Mutable is Vata. Cardinal is Pitta. And fixed is Kapha. So all the mutable signs are at the end of a season. So for example, right now, the sun's in Gemini, and the Gemini is the last of the spring signs, right? And then we shift into cardinal at the beginning of the season, because cardinal is like Pitta, it's that spark, that dynamic movement, and kind of like that flame lighting up, right? That initiation, that first kind of pulse of energy is Pitta, is cardinal. That's why all the cardinal signs begin a new season. So Cancer is cardinal water that initiates the summer months, right? Then you have Leo is fixed fire. All the fixed signs are in the middle of the season, which is when that season is at its like peak, right? And then the mutable signs are at the end. So then summer ends with Virgo, mutable earth. So that's kind of an interesting thing. Just I remember learning about that with Ayurveda, like, oh, seasonal transitions are ruled by Vata. Well, it's the same way in astrology, that all the seasonal transitions are governed by a mutable sign, and mutable and Vata are one and the same thing. So some of the other qualities or attributes of Vata is that's light, right? It's lightweight. Lightweight, and it tends to be hard and rough. Hard and rough. So oftentimes, like, you'll see if people have, like, really rough, dry skin, right? Like running your fingers down the edge of a book, you know? That feeling, that roughness and kind of hardness, that's a vata quality. And this is how, in Ayurveda, many of these doshas are assessed, is by looking at the qualities, like all these different qualities. So they have 20 primary qualities in Ayurveda that exist in polarity, like soft and hard, light and heavy, hot and cold, wet and dry, etc. So whereas in Western herbal traditions, we primarily look at, you know, two polarities of qualities, hot and cold, wet and dry, they have 20 of them that really shows a lot more of the specifics of them. Some of them, to me, are a little like, I don't really know how to determine that. But some of it, like there's cloudy and clear, right? Cloudy and clear. So that you can think of that with your mind. Like, we all know a cloudy mind or a clear mind. But that can also be a way of assessing, when a big way of assessment in Ayurveda is through urine analysis, right? Is the urine clear or is the urine cloudy, right? So there's different ways of assessing the qualities of things. You know, you can look at pain. Is that pain sharp or is it dull? Well, a sharp pain is like a pitta pain. A dull pain is more of like a kapha pain, right? So there's different ways of differentiating the quality of something that thereby gets you more specific into determining what the underlying energetic force behind it is. So generally speaking, vata is the principle of movement and change. Oh, that's a typo. It is what carries pitta and kapha through the body. And we see that vata is the easiest of the doshas to go out of balance because it's changeable. It's constantly changing. It's like it's high one day and low the next. It's cold one day and then it's dry. And then it's over here and then it's over there. And then the symptom comes and then the symptom goes. And then it's like all over the place, right? So it is one of them considered the difficult, one of the most difficult doshas to treat and the easiest of the doshas to go out of balance. And we see that vata is directly related to, so each of these doshas has kind of, I like to think of it as the, because I tend to think of things kind of alchemically, I like to think that each of the doshas has a transmuted form of it that's like the quintessence of that dosha, that's kind of the peak quality of that dosha. And so with vata, we see that the transmutation of vata is prana, or prana is like the highest embodiment of vata. And prana, as I'm sure all of you know, is the life force. And it's prana is what, it's the invisible force behind our breath, right? So every time we breathe in, we're breathing in not just oxygen, but we're breathing in life force. We're breathing in prana. And that's what animates our body. And people with clear, healthy prana have like really clear perception, and like a really clear mind. So all movement is due to vata, right? So if you think of what makes your body move, is that wind element. But it's also like, if you think of the mobile parts of your body, it's the joints, right? You have your elbows and your hips and your knees and your neck. And right, all the joints of your body are all ruled by vata. This is where one of the primary, and I'll go into more, I'm just giving you a really brief outline here to start off with. I'm going to go into a lot more detail on how you start to see the doshas in the constitution, diseases, organs, etc. But right now I'm just trying to give you a little overview really quickly. But a lot of people with high vata tend to have joint problems, and you'll hear like that clicking, popping joints a lot. that 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, yeah. 13 primary joints of the body relate to the 13 cycles of the moon. 2 ankles, 2 knees, 2 hips, 2 wrists, 2 elbows, 2 shoulders, and then 1 neck. The 13 primary joints of the body. And then fingers line up a certain way. What is it? 1, 2, 3, 6, 9, 12. Oh, me and my buddy Tyler did this whole thing where we counted all the... We started getting into like astral anatomy and relating it to all the astrology and stuff. It was pretty interesting. I can't remember how we did the joints of the hands, but anyways. Okay, so when imbalance, in a good, you know, in, not imbalance, but
in
balance, Vata is very creative, very flexible, right? They have that mind that's able to go up and out, right? So a lot of times, like, people think of it as a bad thing. Like, a lot of times people talk about the doshas, like, oh, those Vatas, they're so spaced out all the time. But they have this ability to be creative, right? That they're visionary, that they can expand beyond the limits and boundaries and to gather something new, right? So they have this connection to that kind of the invisible strata of life and to gather something new. So they have this fresh, light, happy, joyful, exuberant kind of quality to them. When out of balance, though, it slips into fear. Fear is the primary emotional response of Vata, fear, which translates into anxiety, tension, stress, tremors and spasm, etc. Now, each of these three doshas has a primary part of life that it governs. So the Vata period of life is age 50 to 100. So the older we get, we start to see more of those Vata diseases come in, right? This is why old people have, you know, memory issues, dementia, Alzheimer's, joint pain, arthritis. They get, everything gets dried out. Their physical body starts to get more dry. And of course, that's the last thing, you know, when we die, it's that prana, that breath, that Vata is that last breath. And then you start to see the physical body oftentimes, you know, weakens, right? You start to see that air, ether element become more prominent. And we can see, I'll talk about how we see the doshas in plants later when I talk about constitution, so I'm not going to talk about that right now. Okay, next we have Pitta. So Vata is, remember our elements, this is air, and this is ether. Okay, so then we have Pitta is water and fire. Yeah, that's right. So Pitta is composed of fire and water. And it's a really important premise of Pitta that a lot of people overlook, that a lot of people think Pitta is like, oh, fire, 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 which it is primarily fire, but they oftentimes forget about the water aspect of Pitta, which is really important. So according to Ayurvedic philosophy, fire can't exist without water. Right, that we can't have a fire in our body unless there's a water there with it to temper it, right? Otherwise it would just burn right through us, right? And that's why, like, taking our stomach, for example, is a great example. The stomach secretes hydrochloric acid, right, as part of the digestive process, but in order to buffer that hydrochloric acid, it also secretes alkaline substances as well to buffer that acidity so that it doesn't, like, burn right through our stomach, right? So that's an example of Pitta, fire and water in combination. So the water tempers the fire and maintains its balance. Some of the attributes, so Pitta relates to cardinal, and so as I said, cardinal is the energy that initiates and activates things, right? So all the cardinal signs of the zodiac are at the beginning of the season, right? So we have Aries, cardinal fire is the beginning of spring, Cancer, cardinal water, beginning of summer, Cardinal air is Libra that initiates the autumn, and then we have cardinal earth is Capricorn, which initiates the winter. So those are all of our cardinal signs are at our equinox and solstice, right? So March 21st, Aries, June 21st, Cancer, September 21st, Libra, and then December 21st for Capricorn. So that lends some interesting insight into the Pitta dynamic and the cardinal quality. These are the activating, the kind of active energy, right? And it's very, Pitta is very dynamic. It's very fiery, right? Is the kind of the main way to think of Pitta, is that it is very fiery. So its primary attributes, it's hot, it's light, but yet it's also fluid. And this is one thing people oftentimes forget about Pitta, is that there is a fluidity and that there's a moisture component to Pitta, especially pure Pitta. People with very pure Pitta, the important thing is that the water element is not only a part of Pitta, but it's also a part of Kapha. And one of the ways Matthew Wood taught me to differentiate the water of Kapha and the water of Pitta is that the water of Kapha is like phlegm and water. The water of Pitta is oil. Pitta's oily. This is a key thing with Pitta. And so oftentimes you see, like, one of the prime expressions of excessive Pitta is like oily acne. Like really, really red, hot, oily acne in the skin. That's a pretty simple example of a Pitta condition. Pitta is also sharp and penetrating. So we think of the way heat and fire penetrates in that way too. And so for me, I tend to like to think of the qualities just really briefly as thinking in terms of hot, cold, wet, dry, heavy, and light. Those are the three main ways I like to think of the three doshas. So with Vata, we have cold, dry, and light. For Pitta, we have hot, wet, and light. And I'll plug in Kapha here in a little bit. So we can see the main difference here between Vata and Pitta. They're both light, but one's hot, the other's cold, one's wet, the other is dry. And so those three qualities are a really good way, and each one of these doshas is gonna have something that's unique to it that the other ones don't have. So we'll see that when we get to it there. So Pitta, I like to think of Pitta as the principle, so whereas Vata is like the principle of movement in our body, Vata is what moves us and gives us intellectual function and kind of expansion of our mind and our consciousness. Pitta is metabolism, right? This is the fire of the body that enables us to metabolize, to digest, to absorb, to circulate nutrients and oxygen, and for our cells to take in those substances and digest and assimilate and expel the waste products. So that whole processes metabolism, right? Anabolic, building things up, catabolic, breaking things down. And so Pitta, the heat, governs that process of biochemical change happening in the body. So we think of Pitta is also not just our metabolic fire, but it's like our psychological fire too, right? So it's our ability to digest experience and assimilate Mercury is so retrograde right now. Sorry, guys. Bear with me this weekend. The ability to digest and assimilate our experiences and information. So oftentimes people that like they have a hard time like understanding things or intellectualizing things. It's like that flame of perception and intellect sometimes is slightly diminished. So Pitta, like some of the positive expressions of pittas, like leadership and authority and being in their power and being strong and being very driven. Like, pittas are like the go-getters. They're the, like, you know, they're the ones that are going to, you know, pioneer something, or they're going to lead something, or they're going to be in some way, like, using their energy and directing it in a positive direction. When out of balance, that's going to tend to express itself as like frustration and anger and irritability. And it's like there's so much energy inside them that if it's not being channeled in an appropriate way, oftentimes it'll kind of get out in these other ways that maybe aren't quite so joyous or pleasant. Maybe that pleasant was the word I wanted. So pitta, yes, we will cover more of those dynamics a little later. So the life cycle, age 16 to 50. So we think of, you know, that pitta dynamic really comes in for most of our adult lives, is governed by pitta, right? And you think of what is that time of our life about, right? It's like, you know, it's like that the energy, and we're directing our energy and focusing it on our purpose or our path or our work or career. You know, we're focusing our flame in a certain direction, right? And that's, you know, typically the considered, you know, at the time in our lives where we have a lot of vitality and energy. That's the way it should be, at least. Maybe not so much in our modern world, but it's really like the more active period of our life. Okay, so then we have kapha. Oh, and pitta. So the transmutation of pitta is called tejas. So tejas is the refined essence of pitta, and tejas is like that flame of perception, and that we'll talk about agni later on, but it's like I was talking about that sharpness in the mind and that sharpness of the intellect and the ability to see into things, to see into the truth, and like the alchemists call it like the secret fire. It's like that secret fire, that flame of perception that perceives the secret fire in a plant or in an animal, and it's that consciousness. So prana is like that connection to life force. Tejas is that flame of awareness and that ability to kind of penetrate into things. Okay, so then lastly we have kapha.
Can I just have a really quick comment?
Yeah, please. Uh-huh.
On the side, but...
Uh-huh.
You're talking about like the water tampering the fire. Makes me think of like the mythology of Pele and like the Hawaiian tradition, where basically like she leaves her island and her sister is like the water, and it keeps like chasing her, and like every island she moves to, her sister the water sort of like puts the fire out.
Huh.
So she moves like further and further out.
Huh.
Brings her to the big island where she's at now.
Oh, interesting. And she's like, represents that fire?
Yeah, Pele is totally like the fire goddess, like volcano.
Oh, interesting. Huh, nice. Yes, I always love those, hearing old stories like that and the mythologies and how it all... Yeah, totally. So with kapha, we have fixed... And it's composed of earth and water. And so here with kapha, we see that that combination of the two most fixed elements, earth and water, combine to create this dosha. Vata combines those very ethereal elements of air and ether. And then pitta is kind of right in the middle. So when we get into talking about the constitution of each of these doshas and kind of how you'll see them in plants, you'll start to see how those elemental... That's why I like doing the elements first, because just by knowing the elements, by combining earth and water, you already have probably a pretty good picture about what kapha looks like, right? What it, how it's going to express itself. So the way I like to think of kapha is, and the way the elements interact, it's like the earth that holds the water, but also the water that mobilizes the earth, right? Because earth, and this is the beauty of the dosha model, is that in Ayurveda, they see that the elements don't exist in isolation, that in fact, it's impossible for them to exist in isolation. Right, that earth without water is just like frozen, is rigid, it's stiff, there's no fluidity for it, right? It's like if we didn't have the water element in the earth, everything would just be kind of stuck. And so they saw that, and in a way, that's why, I think that's probably why they didn't use the elements so much for their therapeutic model, because they saw that that you can't really divide the elements and separate them and understand life. You gotta see how they work together, how they recombine in these different patterns. So the earth and water combine with kapha to bring that movement and moisture to the earth, that movement. So the primary attributes here of kapha is that it is cold and wet and heavy. So if we look at this, just these three dynamics here, what do we see? Kapha, both kapha and vata are cold. They're both cold. Vata and pitta are both light. Pitta and kapha are both wet. But we see that kapha is the only heavy one. We see that vata is the only dry one, and that pitta is the only hot one. You see that? So each of them have something about them that is unique, and that's something that's pretty important to take into consideration. So dryness of vata is very unique, the heat of pitta is unique, and the heaviness of kapha is unique to it. We also see that kapha tends to be very dense and kind of dull and slow, but there's also a smoothness and a softness to it. And they also describe kapha as cloudy. And you often see, like, especially with like a damp kapha urinary tract infection, like the urine will be very cloudy, almost like it almost has like mucus in it. Kind of cloudy urine. And then sometimes you can see that people with like excess kapha, they can sometimes like you ever see people where they have like their eyes are just like ding, like you see that like kind of like illumination, kind of like light emanating from their eyes, and you kind of see people that are kind of like kind of have like a little like they just look like there's like a haze or like a cloudiness to their eyes. So that's a, like a kapha kind of quality. But then you can think of that like thinking too, like. You'll know how it is when you just have cloud, like brain fog, right? It's just like that's a very like kapha in the mind. So that cloudiness is another dynamic there with kapha. So the thing that's important about kapha is that it's the physical structure through which pitta and vata work through, right? So it's the physical vehicle through which the other two doshas are able to manifest and express, because it's the earth element. It's what anchors the other two doshas into something physical. But we also want to think that kapha is also the waters of the body that give it mobility and like lubrication, right? It's like, whereas vata is the actual movement of the body, kapha is what allows that movement to be fluid and like kind of lubricates it. So, and then you think of like the protective waters of our mucous membranes, right? All of those waters in the lungs and the urinary tract and the reproductive system and the bowels, all of those fluids are all governed by kapha. So we want to think of the waters of the body, and we'll get into more depth on the different anatomical areas governed by each dosha in a little bit here. So kapha is really about like strength and vigor and stability, and is like there's a solidity to kapha that's like a like they tend to be like dependable and reliable and grounded and practical, and they're like, okay, step one is here, okay, I'm going to do that, and then step two is there, and I'm going to do that, and then step three is there, I'm going to do that, whereas a pitta is like, okay, we're just going to do this like way too fast, and they do it way too fast, and they rip right through it, and they get to the end first, but they maybe skip some things in the process, and then the vata is maybe like, oh, what's that? What? You know? So I'll give more examples of kind of how the doshas are. I try to bring a little bit of humor into it because we all know people like this. So so then the fixed signs are in the middle of the season. So when that seasonal force is fixed in the earth, right? When it's at its like strongest force. So I guess I can write down the different signs. Would that be good? Was that nice? Okay, so for our mutable signs, we have Gemini. And then we have, let's see, we have Gemini, we have Sagittarius, we have Pisces, and we have Virgo. Whoops. Okay. So that's Gemini, Sag, Pisces, Virgo. For Pitta, our cardinal signs, we have Aries. Oops. Aries and Libra. And we have Cancer and Capricorn. And then for our fixed signs, we have Taurus and Scorpio. And then we have Leo and Aquarius. Now, that doesn't mean that if you're Leo, that you're kapha, right? Because Leo is also ruled by the sun and is the fire element, right? So Leo is much more of a pitta kind of constitution, but I do like to lay those out because we do see that fixed kapha dynamic present in each of those signs, but in slightly different ways. But it doesn't mean immediately if you have six planets in that sign that you're going to be that dosha, right? I just like to, it's important for you to understand that. I want you to think that, but it's just, it's helpful to understand the correspondences here and how the modes and the doshas relate to one another. So those are our signs. And then for kapha, the transmutation of kapha is ojas. As I mentioned earlier, and ojas is that refined, kind of the refined essence of the body. It's like the distilled essence of our being. It's like the juice, that rejuvenative vitality of the body. So a lot of rasayana therapy or the rejuvenative therapy is geared towards ojas, trying to build ojas. And we'll talk later when we get into some anatomy, the way in Ayurveda they look at their anatomy. But there's seven primary tissues, and you see that each tissue is formed through the ingestion of food, and that the fire element or the pitta of the body processes and digests that food to turn it into each of the tissues, right? And so each tissue is formed from whatever's left over from the previous one, and it gradually goes, and sometimes those channels can become clogged and certain tissues become malnourished or deficient or weak because that vital essence of our food isn't able to get there. But they say that beyond the seventh tissue is where we create ojas from. Is where we create ojas. So our ability, basically in Ayurvedic philosophy, we want to have that those channels be clean, have each of those tissues be nourished and strong so that the digested essence of your food can go into building ojas, building vitality, because ojas is what makes you live long time. So okay, and then just to mention here the 20 qualities I mentioned very briefly. These are different ways, qualities we can look at anything, not just people, but nature, plants, etc. And these are kind of nice polarities to keep in mind when you're looking at something to assess its dosha quality, right? So I mentioned some of these, I'll just run through them really quickly. There we have heavy and light, so whether something is kind of downward moving or lightweight moving up and out, oily or dry. We can also think of that as being wet or dry. Cold and hot, obviously. They say slow and sharp as kind of two polar qualities. I don't really know if I fully understand how slow and sharp. I mean, I can a little, but it seemed like slow and quick would be a little bit more better term. But then we have soft and hard. So that can be a really good differentiation. For example, like a cough or like with mucus or something, like, oh, is the mucus coming up hard or is it like kind of frothy and soft, or is the cough really hard and racking, or is it just kind of like, or is it like the whole, like really hard cough? So there's different ways you can see that. Stable and mobile. They talk about slimy and rough, gross or subtle, dense or liquid, cloudy or clear. So these qualities can be, we can look at our food, we can think about our herbs, we can think of the weather, we can think of a person or thoughts, and use those qualities to start to differentiate them and determine the specific balance of the doshas. So does anybody have the time? Really need to get a clock up here.
4:40.
4:40. Okay, great. So we can. How are you guys doing? Do you guys want me to take a quick little break, or are we good to maybe jump in a little bit more detail on the doshas here? All right, let's dig in. So, so what I'd like to do is do some more details on the doshas here. We'll just continue on forward with this. I usually break this up a little bit more, but I think I'd like to be a little bit more cohesive with it. So so before digging into a little bit more details on this, I'd like to talk just a little bit about constitutional theory a little bit more, and how that looks from an Ayurvedic perspective. So at the root of any holistic system of medicine, as I've said, is a recognition of the constitution. And this is a way of assessing the individuality of a person, right? So that we're not just looking at, oh, this person, you know, this is how you can differentiate like three different people with three similar symptoms and three completely different therapeutic strategies and treatment models. So that's how you start to get really specific into your remedy selection, into your formulating, and all of that. So, hey Atisa, welcome. You made it. Awesome. So the constitution is a pattern language, right? It's a pattern language. It's not a language of biochemistry. It's a language of energetics. And this is really where we start to get much more refined in our practice of herbalism and getting out of take this for that mindset. Did I tell you guys my story about the naturopath that... and the conference, and I was talking about constitutional theory. Did I tell you that? Oh, it was really interesting. It was kind of like it really clicked something into place for me. This person was being extremely rude and kind of talking to me like I was an idiot, which I just took it. So we were talking about herbs and therapeutics and different models, and this particular doctor was very rational in their approach. They were very took a very biomedical approach, and they primarily used isolated herbal constituents and supplements, and they didn't kind of have a whole plant therapy model, which tends to be the way I think about it. And anyway, somehow we started talking about constitutional theory, and I was talking about at the root of pretty much every system of medicine from around the world is a concept of the constitution, so that you're not just treating the disease, but you're treating the person, the whole person, and recognizing the whole person. And then I was talking about the elements and how the elements are really that universal constitutional model, and Chinese medicine, Tibetan medicine, Ayurveda, even though you're talking about doshas, the doshas are composed of elements. So Greek humoral theory, Carl Jung's psychological theory, it's like it all comes down to the elements, and we were talking about this concept of constitutions and energetics, and he was like, he kind of got this like, well, that just seems like a rather elementary way to practice medicine to me when you could be using science. And I was like, I don't know what to say to that. And, the conversation ended and it was awkward and I felt butt hurt. And I was like, they don't understand me. But I started really thinking about it and I was like, well, yeah, it is elementary. Right? Because it's elemental. Like you're thinking, you're using the elements. And I was thinking like elementary is the building blocks, right? It's like you go to elementary school before you go to get your PhD, right? And I was thinking about the constitution. Yeah, it's elementary. That's your foundation. That's always where you start with understanding a person and where they're at, because that's what's going to determine what herbs you give them and how those herbs are going to impact and influence them, especially if you're giving someone an herb that they're going to take over a long-term period of time. It's super important, really, really important. So I don't know. I always kind of thought of that. Like, yeah, this is actually elementary, but isn't that where you should start? So. All constitutional systems are systems of energetics. So we're looking at patterns behind physiology, patterns behind psychology. We're looking at the specific composition of the body, how the body is composed of these forces of nature, not just the body as the whole, but then the constitution and of each of the organ systems, right? So, there's a difference. You're going to treat a urinary tract infection that's cold, heavy, damp, mucousy, and boggy versus a hot, sharp, dry, inflamed, sensitive urinary tract infection, right? Because the constitution of that organ is different. Those are two very different constitutions of the organ. So that's really like, that would be like, there's a pitta UTI and a kapha UTI. And so there's layers of constitution. We have the overall general constitution of the person. Then we have this constitution of the disease. Now, in general, when you're thinking therapeutically, if someone comes to you with an acute thing like a urinary tract infection, right? You're going to want to focus more on the constitution of the organ system and the disease and not be quite as worried about the whole person's constitution, right? Does that make sense? So it's like if someone comes to you and maybe they're a kapha constitution, but they have a pitta condition, you're going to treat that pitta condition and not be too concerned about, but they're a kapha person, I don't want to give them this herb because that's like a cooling herb, but they've got heat in there, right? So it's, again, maintaining our perspective on the whole person and then also thinking about what's going on in the tissues and in the organs and in an acute situation, the state of the organs and tissues becomes of greater importance than the whole constitution. I hope that makes sense. Just let me know if I'm being confusing sometimes. Okay, cool. Sometimes when Mercury is retrograde, and I've taught during Mercury retrograde a lot, I find myself, I'm like, you know, I'm like saying all these words, and as I'm saying, I'm like, am I making any sense right now?
That is not a long-term condition. It's something that can be remedied quickly.
Yeah.
You can attack it quickly with something for that, so you're not giving it to something for a long-term.
Right.
Having a urinary tract infection for 3 years.
Right, yeah, exactly. Yeah, precisely. But when it gets into, but really, this is like the constitution of the person, that's what you want to think of in terms of like, doing like, say, like some sort of rejuvenation protocol or something. Like you're gonna give someone herbs for like 6 months, 8 months mm-hmm. at a time. That's when you're like, okay, what's their constitution, and making sure that you're using your herbs and formulating them correctly so it's not gonna throw them out of balance. And oftentimes you figure that out by giving them the herbs, and then they come back and say, yeah, I didn't like it, it was a little too hot for me. Right? It's like I was listening to a lecture Michael Tierra gave, and he was actually saying that for him, administering herbs is part of his evaluation process. He says, I don't really totally understand the underlying root cause of someone's problem sometimes after the third or fourth visit. He's like, because, you know, first visit, initial intake, I'll get a general sense for what's going on. I'll give them the herbs. And then when they come back a week later, I say, how did you respond to those herbs? Oh, either it did this or it did that or it did this or it did that. And how the herbs acted on the person will give him more clarity as to what's really going on with the condition. That was a kind of a like a major aha moment for me. I was like, wow, so like actually seeing how the client reacts to the herbs is part of your diagnostics, basically, which that really kind of was like, huh, like it makes a lot of sense, but I don't know why I'd never thought of it like that before.
Just using the UTI as an example, it can be an acute maybe onset for somebody, but what if they have them reoccurring all the time, which you can with UTIs,
yeah.
Then would you want to look then at their overall imbalance in their doshas?
Yeah.
Yeah,
I would say for stuff that comes and goes like that. Well, there's definitely a lot of dynamics you would want to look at there specifically for like a UTI. You know, then you want to get into like lifestyle stuff. If things are keep coming, it's like, okay, are they eating something they shouldn't be eating? Have they had antibiotic history? Is their flora impacted? Is their leaky gut? That's where you want to start digging in and kind of look at some of the other factors there.
Yeah, so this concept of like acute and chronic is like always kind of bugged me.
Yeah.
Because it's like, how can an acute condition exist in this vacuum of the body? Of like, here's some kapha person who has this like really like pitta thing going on.
Right.
And if that whole like root of that dosha is this flux of balance, like there's got to be a connection between the acute expression and the imbalance of the constitution, right?
Yep. Yep. Yep.
And
absolutely.
Then it gets kind of overwhelming.
Yeah, totally. Totally. Yep. Yeah, and that's, they say it's easiest to treat an acute imbalance, like a pitta person with a kapha imbalance, or a vata person with a kapha imbalance, or a pitta person with a vata imbalance. Like those are easy to treat, but when you have a vata person with a vata imbalance, that gets difficult because now the constitution and the disease are the same, so it's driving it deeper into the tissues, right? So that's where things get a little bit more difficult. So thinking of constitutions, we're looking at the pattern, the underlying patterns. So allopathy looks at symptomatology, right? We're looking at the symptoms of the condition. Naturopathy, we're looking at etiology, right? What is the cause of the symptom, right? And when we're looking at things from an energetic or a constitutional perspective, we're looking at what's the energetic force behind the etiology. So what is the ecological state of the organism that allowed that cause of the symptoms to arise, right? So I really think of things from an ecological perspective, like thinking of the human organism as an ecosystem. And that's really why these doshas are so incredible, because they have these, the ways the elements interact and the different sites of the body where they go and accumulate. It gives you this ecological perspective of the body. And so that's really what we're looking at with the constitution, is we're looking at the energetics behind the etiology and the symptomatology. And as I've said, this is where we start to be able to differentiate our herbal remedies. So, you know, you go to your herb book and you look up herbs for the digestive system and you have 150 plants there. How do you differentiate one from the other, right? And of course, we can do that with herbal actions, but even herbal actions, you take that 150 plants for the digestive system and you say, okay, now I want my carminatives. Then you separate all the carminatives out and now you've got 50 plants, but how do you tell the difference between chamomile and fennel and peppermint and anise and, you know, the many other carminative plants that exist? How do you start to differentiate them? So one of the ways you do that is splitting it up into the actions, other actions, right? Oh, this is a carminative that's more antispasmodic. This is a carminative that has a little bit of a bitter property. This is a carminative that's a circulatory stimulant. But then you can get in even more detail by getting into the energetics. Like, oh, these ones are warming, these ones are cooling. That's where you really start to get specific. And that's the information that you really need to have about plants in order to apply them to match the energetics of the person, the constitution, and or the condition. So this is where you start to refine the laundry list of hundreds of plants down into the ones that are more specifically suitable for that person. So that's the beauty of constitutional theories, is that they're really, you're looking at the whole person, right? You're looking at the whole person. You're not just tunnel visioning in on the symptom, but you're looking at how that acute symptom, as Katie was saying, how that acute system is in relationship to the rest of the organism. So you're maintaining that focus. Through understanding our own constitution, we're able to see more deeply into our tendencies, our habits, our likes, our dislikes, what do we like? What do we dislike? What feels good? What doesn't feel good? How does our mind function, right? As these things are, they're not just describing physiology, they're describing psychology too. So it's like, why is it that some people are just totally content to just like sit around and hang out and not do that much, and other people like that, they just can't stand doing, they have to like be active and they have to do stuff and they gotta be going out there and like being really active. Like, well, why is that, right? It's like, well, their mind is put together, like their mind has different constituents behind it, right? The constitution of their mind is put together differently. And so this is how sometimes just by looking at someone, you can immediately start to have a sense for how their mind is, like how, what foods they like to eat or what things they're drawn to or just their general habits and tendencies. And it's not like this super psychic ability, it's just seeing the energetic patterns. Understanding our constitution also enables us to know how to adjust our lifestyle to be in accordance with the seasons. And I'll do a whole section on seasonal dynamics with the doshas at some point this weekend. But that's really, really helpful to see, like, oh, I notice that every time in the winter, this thing starts happening. And so through this understanding, you're able to see, like, oh, well, maybe I need to shift my diet to balance out that energetic force during that season, or integrate certain herbs to maintain to regulate your constitution so that you can stay in balance with the seasons, with environmental shifts. Like I remember, what Whitney was mentioning earlier, we did this conference down in New Mexico a number of years ago, And we knew that it was hot and it was dry there, and that we both tend towards dryness. So we took a bunch of marshmallow root with us, and we're just drinking like quart jar after quart jar of that marshmallow infusion. And we didn't get as dry, right? So we were able to incorporate herbs into our lives because we knew we were going to an environment that was going to stress our bodies out, right? And so we were able to consciously use the plants to help keep us in balance like that. So everything has a constitution, not just people, but plants. And that's what I like to think of as the energetic architecture of the plant, the constitution of the plant. So people tend to talk about constitutional theory just in relationship to people, but it also relates to plants too.
I just had this like little thing you're talking about, the acute
yeah.
part
thing. Oh yeah.
Talking about that like if the acute is this thing that's this expression of the vital force and like what it's doing, it's what it's needing by like just treating what's at hand, like what's right here in front of you, then it's gonna like reflect back into this bigger constitutional balance.
Yeah.
So like that was that thing about not taking that constitutional thing, because then you're gonna miss the pathway of how to get there.
Yeah.
Because that's the language.
Yeah. Well said.
Yeah.
Well said. Right. It's like we have to get outside of our isolational ways of seeing things, you know, of like, oh, I'm just treating the acute symptom, but it's like, oh, but that acute symptom is connected to the rest of the body, to the wholeness of the body, right? It's like, I feel like the more we can get out of our way of seeing parts and into seeing wholes, the better. Yeah. And that, yeah, like you said, when you do treat the acute symptom, you are actually impacting the whole constitution too. So, Mimi.
I had a question about the marshmallow root, because I've been thinking about that a lot since our last class.
Uh-huh.
When you make the infusion and just, like, let it sit overnight,
mm-hmm.
do you drink the marshmallow root itself?
You can. Like you can. You can just take the sliminess too.
Mm-hmm. I've been like soaking it overnight and then just blending it up in my smoothie.
Oh yeah, great, nice.
But I didn't.
That's totally fine.
Like drinking it just the way that it is.
Yeah, no, that's great. Yep. Yeah, you can strain it, or I'll just sometimes just take a Bombilla and just stick the Bombilla in there and just drink it down, and then pour more water over it, let it sit the rest of the day, and then drink it again. You can usually do like maybe one or two steepings of it. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Cool. It's nice. It's great for smoothies. It makes them nice and thick and smooth and cooling. Great with blueberries and chia. That's like a super nice mucilaginous drink, because blueberries are actually have a little bit of mucilage to them. A little bit. Yeah, but the chia is definitely super mucilaginous. Anybody ever soaked chia seeds before? Whoa. Yeah, all right, yeah, totally. Yeah, so that's a great example of like a demulcent, mucilaginous kind of food.
So you could do like a chia marshmallow root concoction.
Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah, yeah.
She just said that too.
Yeah, put some coconut cream and some fruit in there. Good to go. You guys know that trick? You take those cans of coconut milk and put them in the fridge. And then all the cream separates on the top, and you crack those and you scoop the cream out and you whip it up with like a little, like either a fork or like a little, one of those little hand blender things, you know, put some honey in there and some cinnamon. It's like whipped cream. It's so good. Way better than the stuff that comes out of the can. Okay. So an important dynamic here with, and this was a really huge thing for me in understanding constitution. So, and this kind of goes off of some of the things Katie's been bringing up here too. And this is that we have two constitutions. We have what is called our prakriti. So here's that word prakriti again, which remember means great nature. And so our prakriti is our core constitution. It's our innate constitution. The moment we were born and we took that first breath of life, that it's like our prakriti is formed in that moment. And we carry it with us throughout the course of our life, right? That we always, it's like the center of the onion, so to speak, right? And that we have that with us throughout all of our life. Now that prakriti, as I was saying, it's like that core energetic blueprint of who we are and predetermines our tendencies, our habits, our predispositions to disease, weak organ systems, etc. And we carry it with us throughout our whole lives. But then, so say someone is born Pitta, right? They have this very strong fire quality. But then say they move to Washington and they, on their spare time, they watch 14 hours of TV a day and they eat 2 gallons of ice cream a day and they don't exercise and they only eat cold food and they don't really eat healthy, a lot of sweet foods, right? So they start to develop a kapha constitution, right? This person that was really pitta and fiery and energetic and vital, now all of a sudden gets kind of more of this kapha dynamic going on. That's what they call vikruti. That's your assumed constitution. So prakruti is your core constitution. Vikruti is your current constitutional balance, or what we can think of as the constitution of the illness, or not even necessarily illness, because people can have an assumed constitution and still not be sick, right? But maybe through, and this is primarily assumed through lifestyle dynamics, right? Lifestyle and environment. Is going to determine our vikruti or our assumed constitution. So I like to think of prakruti as like the core of the onion, vikruti is like the layers of the onion that get put on top of that, and that in our healing process we want to peel away those layers, peel away that assumed constitution so that we're living in accordance with that core prakruti. So this is a really important thing because, in Ayurveda, you always treat the current dosha balance or imbalance, right? You always treat what is current in that person's constitution. So, and you know, like, have you guys seen those little dosha surveys, you know, where you fill out the little forms? And so you can do those from two different perspectives. Sometimes you'll do them and you'll think about, okay, how have I been my whole life, right? From the moment I was born up until now. And you want to think of, this is how I've been my whole life. Then you want to do it again and say, how am I in the last like 3 months, right? And then you fill it out, and it's going to sometimes be really surprising to see the difference and be like, wow, that's how I've been my whole life, but this is how I am right now. And you'll start to see the differences there. So in Ayurveda, you always treat the most current, where you are now. And the prakriti, that's what you want to build your lifestyle around, right? You want to build your lifestyle around nourishing that. So we want those to be in balance. Of course, one of the tricky things about it, not all the time, but oftentimes we are drawn to the things that drive our dosha out of balance, right? So Mr. Pitta over here really loves hot, spicy, pungent foods that make him out of balance, right? Oftentimes Vatas really like to just kind of float around and travel, and they don't like to be in one place for very long, and, you know, do all these things and that make them more vata, right? So same is true with the kaphas. So it's all about mediating our lifestyle and really understanding the energetics of the different areas of our lifestyle, and whether that's building a dosha quality or decreasing a dosha quality. Because even like certain thoughts that we think are going to build, like they say in Ayurveda, like a thought has a certain doshic quality to it that then will then resonate with the certain organs that are governed by that dosha and can aggravate it. So even like the thinking, the way we think directly translates into our body and can build that dosha into a state of excess. So so the diet and lifestyle and thinking and emotions play a big role in what determines our assumed constitution. Oh yeah, so another important aspect here before I get into more detail on each of the doshas is that, okay, so each of us has our own unique constitutional balance, right? That's the whole thing with constitution, is that it's individual and unique to you. So a lot of people will think that finding their dosha balance is getting vata, pitta, kapha in perfect balance within them. But that only works if someone has a vata, pitta, kapha constitution, right? So for me, like, constitutional balance for me is going to be really different from each of you, right? Because I express pitta and vata in my own unique way. And that it's all about managing and keeping those doshas in balance in the way that they're uniquely kind of embedded and anchored in my being, right? And that's the way, oftentimes, like the way Vasant Laud teaches it, is that you do like a numerical value for each dosha. So like, I think I'm like a pitta 3 or 4, vata 2, and kapha like 0 or 1, right? And so that's my constitutional balance, right? Is to have a little like a little more pitta, a little less vata, and even less kapha, right? But that's going to be different for each of you. Does that make sense? So your constitutional balance doesn't mean vata, pitta, kapha are all equal. It's whatever your unique prakriti is, that's your unique constitutional balance. So that's a really important thing. Sometimes people get confused of like, oh, I don't have any of that, so I need more of that. But it's like, no, it's just like working with what that core innate constitution is. So, does that make sense? An assumed constitution and innate constitution, really big piece and really, really helpful and key for therapeutics there, because it keeps you focused on what you need to work with what's right in front of you there. So,